Wisdom, the final frontier to true knowledge. Welcome to Wisdom Trek, where our mission is to create a legacy of wisdom, to seek out discernment and insights, to boldly grow where few have chosen to grow before. Hello, my friend. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, your captain on our journey to increase wisdom and create a living legacy. Thank you for joining us today as we explore wisdom on our second millennium of podcast. This is day 1296 of our trek, and it is Worldview Wednesday. Creating a biblical worldview is important in order to have a proper perspective on today's current events. To establish a biblical worldview, it is required that we also have a proper understanding of God and His Word. Our focus for the next several months on Worldview Wednesday is mastering the Bible through a series of brief insights. These insights are extracted from a book by the same title from one of today's most prominent Hebrew scholars, Dr. Michael S. Heiser. This book is a collection of insights designed to help you to understand the Bible better. When we let the Bible be what it is, we can understand it as the original readers did and as the original writers intended. Each week, we will explore two additional insights. So today's topics will be Mastering the Bible, Holiness, and Theology. Insight number 27. The biblical concept of holiness includes, but is not limited to, moral behavior. Holiness is one of the most frequently characterizations of God in the Bible. Unfortunately, what the concept actually means is frequently understood. In our modern context, holiness is typically associated with moral behavior, particularly in a negative sense. Avoiding certain behaviors produces or demonstrates holiness. The behaviors to be avoided are either a moral prohibition in the Bible or activities a Christian subculture does not associate with God's own character. Holiness in the Bible does relate to personal conduct, but the concept is much broader. The description, holy, is applied to an amazingly diverse list of things, including God, people, days, ground, offerings, garments, oil, events, structures, water, divine beings, utensils, and bread. Since many of these items are inanimate objects, moral purity is not in the picture. In the simplest terms, one thing unites the items on this list. They are all associated with God. Holiness, therefore, is linked to the person and presence of God. For that reason, scholars have concluded that the best way to understand holiness is God's utter uniqueness or otherness in relation to all things. When a person, place, or thing is called holy, the point is that person, place, or thing is set aside exclusively for God's use, service, and remembrance. Whatever is holy by definition is not to be used, attributed, or associated with any other person, place, or thing. Holiness speaks of the uniqueness of God's because God is unique. For this reason, the antonym for holiness is not words like evil or wickedness, rather terms like common or ordinary better describe the polar opposites of holiness. If something was for everyday use in Israel, it was not holy. That which is holy was exclusively devoted to God and His service and worship. There was no middle ground. Behavior becomes a part of the discussion of holiness in its relation to the other concepts, such as clean and unclean, or purity and impurity, terms that spoke of one's ritual fitness for being in God's presence, which was considered sacred space, or participating in religious rituals or practices. The list above demonstrates that holiness encompasses every area of the Israelite life. The effect was practical. Israelites were regularly reminded of God, His absolute otherness and moral perfection. But because they had the law and were in covenant relationship with that same God, Israelites also were regularly reminded that this transcendent being loved them and chose them from among all people. So let's now move on to insight number 28. Some of the strangest ideas in the biblical law teach important points of biblical theology. Certain laws in the Old Testament make little sense to us modern readers. For example, in Leviticus chapters 12 through 15, we read of the various discharges of fluid from the body from both men and women, such as menstrual periods, after giving birth, semen discharges, open sores at sea, diarrhea, and other situations which are not usually dinner table subject matters. if any of these situations occur, the person affected would be considered unclean for various lengths of time, ranging from a day to over 2 months. It is interesting reading if you are so inclined to do so. Why are these discharges, all of which are clearly natural, considered unclean in biblical law? In part, these help everyone to remember the uncleanness is not a moral issue. Rather, uncleanness is concerned with whether a person is fit to enter sacred space, territory occupied by God's presence, or which has been set aside for God. We associate being excluded from entering the divine presence with sin, but these discharges are clearly not sin. Scripture never describes them in that way. Instead, the unclean status taught the Israelites and can teach us important theological truths. Blood and semen had something in common to the Israelite worldview. They were both considered life fluids. Leviticus chapter 17, verse 11 says, "For the life of the body is in the blood. I have given you blood on the altar to purify you, making you right with the Lord. It is the blood, given in exchange for life, that makes purification possible." Israelites knew that severe blood loss meant death. Semen, of course, was where human life came from. Although the Israelites were scientifically and medically primitive and by today's standards, they did know where babies came from. Blood and semen meant life. Their loss was, therefore, symbolic loss of life. Consequently, forbidding a person who has lost the life force was a way of reinforcing a simple theological point. God gives life, and His presence means life, not death. Other biblical laws are derived from this rationale. Israelite law held that human life was sacred because humans are God's imagers. Our perspective should be the same. And we'll close with John chapter 1, verse 4. "The Word gave life to everything that was created, and His life brought light to everyone." And that will conclude the lesson for this week on another two insights from Dr. Heiser's book, Mastering the Bible. Next Worldview Wednesday, we will consider another two additional insights. I believe that you'll find each Worldview Wednesday an interesting topic to consider as we build our biblical worldview. Tomorrow, we will continue with our 3-minute humor nugget that will provide you with a bit of cheer, which will help you to lighten up and live a rich and satisfying life. So I encourage your friends and family to join us and to come along with us tomorrow for another day of Wisdom Trek, Creating a Legacy. If you'd like to listen to any of the past 1,295 treks or read the Wisdom Journals, they are all available at wisdom-trek.com. And I encourage you to subscribe to Wisdom Trek on your favorite podcast player so that each day will be downloaded to you automatically. And thank you so much for allowing me to be your guide, your mentor. But most of all, I am your friend as I serve you through the Wisdom Trek podcast and journal each day. And as we take this trek of life together, let us always live abundantly, love unconditionally, listen intentionally, learn continuously, lend to others generously, lead with integrity, and then leave a living legacy each day. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, reminding you to keep moving forward. Enjoy your journey, and then create a great day every day. See you tomorrow.